Imagine getting a video call from a husband or son in a hospital bed pleading for money to pay the hospital bill. They look panicked, and if you don't pay them, the son or husband's going to go to jail. Well, that actually happened to a retired couple from Cape Town who received the call believing they were talking to their son. The parents transferred the money via EFT without hesitation. The next morning, they contacted their son only to find out the whole thing had been a scam. The thieves had used AI voice and face cloning to convince the parents that their son was in hospital. It's getting more common, and the technology is getting frighteningly good. In another case, scammers used voice cloning to impersonate the CEO of a UK energy firm. So what happened was they called the finance team requesting an urgent payment. The clone voice with that urgency in it was so convincing that the staff authorized a transfer of hundreds of thousands of pounds. With crypto and stable coins becoming faster and easier to transfer, this is now becoming a hot target for scammers. We're joined now by Talia Pillay, co-founder and CEO of Orca Fraud, to see where all of this is headed. Hi, Talia. Thanks very much for your time. AI has changed things, right? And the nature of online fraud, it's becoming harder to detect these instances quickly. Is it becoming a serious problem? And tell us a little bit about your work at Orca Fraud and how you monitor this type of thing.
Amazing. Well, Kieran, thank you so much for having me today. Really looking forward to our discussion. And I think those cases you outlined are the exact cases we're seeing each and every day at Orca Fraud. Fraudsters are really preying on urgency in order to defraud victims. And using AI is just making things 100 times worse. You can imagine that for all the good uses of AI, be it vibe coding, be it using Claude to send your mom a birthday invitation, fraudsters have the exact same tools. So in the past, it was really easy to take phishing and smishing because the SMSs they were sending you had a lot of grammatical errors. There were full stops. You could be like, okay, this person doesn't know my native home language. But now with AI, it's like hyper-personalized. They know exactly who you are. They're also able to reach a far wider audience. So every time you see a scam, be it like a post office scam in your email inbox, just think it's not just you that's being targeted. It's probably 100,000 other people. And that's really what makes scams in the age of AI so lucrative. And at Orca, we're seeing across all the countries we're in, which is around 70 countries and emerging markets, it's becoming hyper-personalized and really, really dire out there.
So how do these fraudsters get your trust? I mean, it happened to me recently with somebody in one of the groups I'm in. Obviously, their contacts were compromised, and I started getting this phone call from a guy called Dr. Lucas. Picture, you know, of a guy, looks like he's from somewhere in Europe, but the accent is clearly, you know, somewhere in Africa. So, you know, that told me straight away not to pay too much attention to it. But maybe not everybody's, you know, alert to this. How do they gain your trust, and what do you watch out for?
It's a good question. There's so many ways to build trust, and I think it really varies by the type of fraud, the types of industries that you look at. So, for example, the big thing in South Africa at the moment are investment scams. So those typically target the elderly and try to get them to invest into different crypto platforms. What makes it really devastating is it's someone who is building trust not just over a single point in time, it's over the course of 12 to 18 months. And they feel like they're getting financial advice, they're being told to invest in this lucrative deal, they're screen sharing with the fraudster. So it's that relationship that evolves and erodes trust. And that's just one example. The other big thing we're seeing is romance scams. So think the Tinder swindler. I always say never mix passion and money. You'll be horrified at how many people you know have actually been a victim of a romance scam, but they just are too embarrassed to talk about it. And then, yeah, there's so many other ways to erode trust. And like what we're seeing in Nigeria, for example, is with SIM recycling, they're essentially able to hijack, let's say, your aunt's mobile number and then impersonate your aunt in order to get you to do something of a monetary nature. So, yeah, lots of ways to build trust, but also a lot of ways to impersonate and create synthetic IDs in the digital age.
It sounds interesting that people would spend 18 months building trust. That's a long time for a scammer to, you know, it's a low return on investment if it doesn't work out. But I guess if it does, it could be a fantastic return on investment. So do people spend that much time, you know, nurturing and cultivating these contacts?
It's been one of my biggest learnings founding Orca over the past 2 years is fraud is a full-time job. So like you and I have our respective full-time jobs, these scammers, these fraudsters are actively figuring out different ways to scam and defraud the various countries and populations they target. So sometimes playing the long game is lucrative because you're essentially defrauding of someone of their entire life savings versus if you want like a quick, easy account takeover. What we're seeing a lot of is, when phones get stolen, they go onto Uber Eats or Mr. Delivery and they buy a bunch of alcohol and then they're able to resell that really quickly. And that happens in 10 minutes. So yeah, I guess it's like any good investment. You need to see your risk appetite. But these longer games are often harder to detect just because that behavior builds up and is consistent over time versus these anomalies, which become like spike or burst attacks, which become a bit more apparent based on the user behavior.
What were those two attacks you just mentioned there?
Burst attacks. So burst attacks could be things like car testing. So in South Africa, as I'm sure you know, we have a lot of data breaches. And as a result of that, we're seeing more and more stolen or leaked card credentials on the dark web. And what fraudsters do is they buy all of those card tokens and then they test them out. So they'll test them out on different websites, different payment portals, and that can be known as a burst attack, or a bin attack. And that's just one of the things that becomes easier to do with AI because you don't have to go in and put in every single card detail. You can just get a script and get a bot to do that for you.
Is cryptocurrency being used quite a lot in these different scams?
I would say yes and no. So at Orca, we work with stablecoin remittances way before the stablecoin hype. And what we're seeing is crypto, like stablecoins, are making it easier and faster to move money across borders. So we are seeing stablecoins getting used for things like money laundering. But at the same time, it's actually the fiat portion which controls and holds a lot of the risk. So, for example, we'll see 60 people sharing an M-Pesa wallet in Kenya, laundering that money into stablecoins and then cashing it out into a different market. I don't think crypto has made that portion riskier. It's more just given them another avenue or channel to use and exploit. And because it's the fees are now cheaper than ever, the margins they make on that are also higher. But I will say in the crypto world, because it is such a high-risk environment, we've seen great advancements in things like on-chain monitoring and being able to track the illicit flow of funds. So it's really awesome to see just how much regulation is coming into effect and making sure that for these newer payment methods and newer rails, we're sufficiently protecting users and merchants alike.
All right, let's talk about behavioral analytics because that's something that I think you do, and you're also using AI. So it's AI versus AI to some extent in this whole game that you're playing. How does that work? I've seen, for example, there are some YouTube videos of hackers getting into these boiler rooms located in India or somewhere around the world, Indonesia maybe. And they clearly are, this is a very industrialized, highly profitable thing that's going on. Are you able to detect where these scams are operating from and actually crack the, give the police a location where they can go and arrest people?
Yes, I think for the most part, that's exactly the work Orca aims to do. So we look at all the different data points associated with the individual. And it's not just their payments and their transactional data, it's also who they are, their KYC, their device information, their behavior on the device. Do you tap with the left hand? Do you tap with the right hand? All of that really helps us build a holistic view of who the person is. And in the case you're describing, we've seen so many SIM farms in places like Kenya and Uganda, literally 1,000 phones, all with different SIM cards, laundering money as fast as possible. So then being able to see the true location of that device, see a large cluster all operating from the same household, really helps us aid and enable investigations in real time. So we specialize in the real-time detection. And why that's really important is money is moving faster than ever. So we need to be able to block the funds in real time or delay settlement depending on the payment rail. And yeah, just incorporating all of that data to make better decisions is how we use machine learning and AI because by then understanding who Kieran is, and, you know, you shop on the e-commerce site every Tuesday, we can immediately see if you've been account, if your account's been taken over and someone's impersonating you. And that's really just like the behavioral detection and changes we look for.
Interesting. Okay, so finally, let's just talk about financial institutions, because that is kind of the backbone of the financial system that we have. What do they have to do to reduce fraud? And also, not in a way that is intrusive for the customers. This has got to be very much a background type of thing. And then I guess also, what do customers do to stop this type of thing from happening?
Awesome. Let's start with the customers. So I think in your hospital bed scenario in the beginning, what we've seen work really well is, you know, with the rise of hostage situations as well as kidnappings, just establishing a safe word with your family members. So like if they call you and they ask for money, you can then clearly be like, this is my safe word, XYZ, let's say it's pineapple. And then they know it's not you or it is you. And that's worked really, really well. And then in terms of institutions, so definitely the data breach cybersecurity aspect is one thing. But to your point, increasing friction dynamically is really important, so that we only are impacting people who we think are fraudsters and not blocking the entire user base. So I always suggest auditing the different defenses you have against fraud. Chances are, you know, fraudsters love a new product. So if you're launching a new product, just making sure you understand all the different ways someone could hack it, all the ways someone could exploit those rails. And then lastly, I think just remember fraud's always evolving. Like a lot of people put defenses into place, but they don't update them. So we've seen such different attacks over the past 2 years. It's almost like every day there's a new fraud type. So it's really important that you don't just implement something and forget about it, but that your teams are constantly equipped with the tools they need to evolve as fraud evolves.
Terrific. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Talia Pillay, co-founder and CEO of Orca Fraud. Thanks for your time, Talia.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us.